Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. This is episode 59 for March 28th, 2016. Do y'all say 2016 or 2016? I kind of go back and forth myself.
I go back and forth.
Yeah. I never said 2004 or 2005, but anyway, I think either way is correct. With me as always, my name is Ben. Of course, with me as always is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hi.
How are y'all?
The goodest.
You're the goodest.
Right on.
If only you could hear what we were talking about before we started rolling, you'll get that.
It all happens backstage, people.
It's gooder than bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so today, our first topic are Boy Scouts, and not the literal Boy Scouts of America, but good boys. Chris, you brought this up a long time ago when we were brainstorming subject ideas. Why do people hate Boy Scouts? Talking about Superman, Captain America, Cyclops. Why do people poo on Cyclops?
Yes.
I didn't realize they did.
It's a storm cloud that
just drops poop on him.
All right.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do the good guys get such a bad rap?
Well, just consistently in the store, I always have to hear people like, I don't like Superman because he's boring, you know, blah, blah, blah. But Batman's cool. Punisher's awesome. You know, you get stuff like that. And a lot of people are always willing to share with me how much they hate Cyclops.
Which is weird. Like, he's demonized by other X-Men, but he's actually doing good. So it's this weird disguise that people make up about him or something.
Yeah. And the thing is, I really gravitate a little bit more towards those characters. So it's always just kind of like, oh, we're going there right now, aren't we? And with Captain America, I think it's a lot of people just thought that he was boring because he was patriotic, although some of that's kind of flipped around differently now in the post 9/11 world.
Well, I don't like Captain America because he's jingoistic.
Right.
Well, upon a time, that was, you know, that's kind of how he was seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he's depicted.
Well, some people just thought boring as well. Yeah. But I think, like, currently the Chris Evans incarnation, I think a lot of people are just like, no, he's a good boy, you know? So yeah, it's just one of those things that you have to get into a much deeper conversation to think about people's own mental standings on, like, what's entertaining and what's acceptable. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, if you read Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman, it's this concept of, like, this character that we've created that is the epitome of what we can be. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about Superman. It's like somebody who doesn't have to be told what's right and wrong, who's just kind of like, no, don't hurt other people. No, help somebody. You know, something like that is what I love the most in comics. Like, I do like it when Peter Parker's less about guilt and more about just doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why characters like the Punisher, like, I think is a good story, but I actually absolutely hate the Punisher as a concept because it's basically like, murder's great, keep murder, you know? And a lot of the fans
keep
that
on
get...
murdering.
Yeah. Vote murder, 2016.
Yeah. A lot of fans that are drawn to that, they're always just kind of like, isn't he awesome? Isn't it cool? And it's just like, no, cautionary tale.
I think it's a reflection of their own sort of mental well-being if they really like the Punisher.
Well, Wolverine is another one too, but
characters like Superman have and Captain America have always have they have a very specific code, you know, and that and characters with codes frequently represent the establishment and the authority and who wants to support that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why over time, these two characters that were such bosom pals have become these polar, you know, Batman and Superman have now become these, you know, opposing forces. That's the way they're characterized now, but they used to be, you know, bosom buddies.
That's why I always love old golden Silver Age World's Finest, because they're on like strolls to the park with an umbrella with Robin and they're all like arms akimbo and just like, talk about my best friend. And it's just like,
they're playing baseball.
Exactly. There's not this like, I'm gonna murder you with my kryptonite ring, you know, stuff
like
that.
Do you bleed?
Yeah, you know, it's just like, oh no, your friends is your friends. But yeah, a big part of that original thing we listed on this was like, why do people poop on Cyclops all the time? And that became this past like year or two, like a real big focus, actually 5 years, they poop on him so much. Focus point for me, because like even during Secret Wars, they murdered him and then they found 7 other versions of him to murder.
Yep.
And then after Secret War, he's still dead. Everybody else got resurrected. Doctor Strange was murdered. He got his own series. Cyclops got murdered. apparently he died again off panel. We didn't get to see it. And he did something to piss everybody off. And everybody's just like, boy, I'm sure glad he's dead and gone. And it's just like, what? But he helped save the world.
Yeah. But Scott Summers has always been incredibly, idyllic's not the right word.
Sacrificial character.
No. he has these ideals that he maintains through thick or thin. Mm-hmm. And you know that's people who have those kinds of strong ideals are threatening. I want to go back to what Chris said about why he likes Superman, and it's something that comes up for me often. Is that, you know, particularly in our culture, we have to be reminded to be altruistic. We have to be reminded to be kind. It's so much easier to be cruel or to fight back.
So much more fun, too, apparently.
Well, yeah, that's the point I was getting to, is that that's far more satisfying to act as that opposing force, to lean in with fists as opposed to leaning in with open arms.
Mm-hmm. There's, I wish I had written down the name of the Tumblr. I'm pretty sure it was called Cyclops Was Right. And, but there was, the guy had chimed in into a debate about who gets the shorthand more often, Aquaman or Cyclops. And so people had to defend who they thought got pooped on more. And somebody had written this one down. I think it was the guy who had Cyclops Was Right. So bear with me a second paragraph here. Cyclops has endured a lot of dismissive slights about being a Boy Scout, but Cyclops is a guy with the power to blow that bad boy Wolverine into space. And he doesn't, no matter how much of a hard time that Canuck gives him, or how many times he hits on his wife. Cyclops keeps it together because his entire life is about keeping it together in order to take care of others. Whether it was keeping his little brother alive as they were forced out of a plane with one parachute when he was like 7, or keeping unruly mutants alive in a world that hates and fears him, he keeps it in check. He could destroy everything around him, but he keeps it in check. Mm. He's the guy you can count on to do the hard work it takes to keep it all together. So, like, I don't know. I like that guy.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy I really like. Good job, you. Yeah. Thanks for not being a douche. Yeah. You can look at something and blow it off the face of the planet, and you didn't.
But you, yeah.
But then everybody calls him a douche too,
right? I mean, because he's strict, and it's just
because he's
by
strict,
the way,
he's, you know, like if you want a leader, if you want to get stuff done, you want Cyclops to be that person, or you want Captain America or Superman. You want those leaders who stand for something and they don't waver from it. Mm-hmm. But if you want a party, go hang out with Logan.
Right.
Like, you can't have necessarily both. You know, I mean, maybe you can, but these characters are really about discipline and like really sticking to your guns in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys ever read Mark Waid's Irredeemable?
Yes.
No,
you know, that was it was a really interesting comic book, but it lost momentum after a while. But basically it's the story of what if Superman went bad and what would happen to the world and how would you put a cap on a guy like this? And and it was a challenging story. It was interesting for a while. But I think one of the things that I appreciated, it just didn't have enough momentum or
longevity.
No, it just wasn't. The series ran for at least 3 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. But the spinoff series, what's it called? It's also an I title.
There's Irredeemable and Incorruptible.
Incorruptible. Yeah. And so Incorruptible is about that the Boy Scout turned evil's arch villain who, as a result of his, I can't remember the characters' names anymore, but as a result of this, the Superman analog going bad, the bad guy finds himself turning good.
And, which was a great concept, but I felt it was forced in the weirdest way on that one. Because the bad guy was about to steal a virus that would kill half the world, and then he got beat. the Plutonian, the hero, killed half the world, and the guy was like, that's not good, I should be good now. And it's just like, you were just about to murder half the world. You don't get to turn that fast.
It felt very contrived, but it was one of the first times that someone addressed stories like that, and I appreciate it for what it was.
Now, like there was a deluge of what if Superman went bad stories for a while there. Mm. So that's people wanting to play around with the idea of like, what if you can't be the Boy Scout all the time? That's okay.
That's a concept that I think, like, why the X-Men get so stuffy about Cyclops and all this stuff is just like, well, you can't be that way all the time. You know, sometimes you got to get your hands dirty, and like Captain America with the Hickman's Avengers stuff or New Avengers stuff, the Illuminati. mm-hmm. where they're like, no, no, we need to do these things. And Captain America is like, no, because people will die. We need to, you know, fight until the end and do what we can. And so what did they do? They mind wiped him and kicked him out of the Illuminati
yeah.
because they needed to get their hands dirty. And Captain America would not waver from that.
Well, and recently they also did compromise Cyclops a lot to the point where he's like, I have a kill team. We have to do these things. Mm-hmm. But there was actually like over the course of 6 or 7 years, you could see him getting trauma because like literally busloads of mutant children were blown up in front of him. And at a certain point, he was just like, no, can't do that. Can't hold back as much anymore. So there was actually like a development of him, but everyone was still like, you're still a stick in the mud. And it's just like, yeah, you do know that if you knock off his glasses, he'll like accidentally kill a bunch of people.
Yes.
We kind of need him to be a stick in the mud. Sorry.
yeah. You know, and so we need Superman to have his code.
Laser
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Lasers.
But the, and they also did the stuff where he got possessed by the Phoenix and he killed Professor X. And everybody's just like, you suck. And it's just like, so everybody else that gets possessed by the Phoenix gets free passes.
Yeah.
Except for this guy.
Yep.
You know, and they were just consistently about that. And now yeah, he's dead now, I guess. I don't know. I remember, too, they did the thing where they brought back his past self yeah. to make current self feel guilty about being a douche. But both selves were like, nah, we okay. I do it again, you know. Yeah. And, well, and then that's the thing. Everybody started being mean to his past self for things that current self did. And so young Cyclops is now basically getting berated for sins he never committed. So now the constant message is just like, go ahead and hate Cyclops. We all do. You should do it.
Do you think it's just like writers who are like, everybody hates Cyclops, so we just got to keep it going. Like yeah. maybe the writers even hate Cyclops.
Well, I think there's actually an editorial edict to make sure to poop on Cyclops. there's a webcomic that actually did this whole thing where somebody's reading like a backup bio about Cyclops and they're like tortured and horrible life and forever haunted by a floating butt that poops on him all the time. And so every time he would show up in this skit, there'd just be a little butt pooping on him and he'd just be like, okay, this is my life now. So, you know, I just get tired. Sorry.
Cyclops sucks to be that
guy.
So
much poop.
Yeah. All right. So do we think that people hate the good guys because they are a representation of the establishment?
It could be a reason.
Or sometimes just simply because they have a particular code of ethics, you know, that is galvanized, that is hardcore, unwaverable, unflappable.
Yeah.
You know, that's well, going back to your talking about, you know, how different writers have, you know, I've always felt that writers never knew what to do with Cyclops because ultimately he's kind of boring.
Same
so they
Superman.
Tried all these wacky duty things with him. They keep coming back to the status quo, you know, and that's unfortunate but you know, they've done some really bizarro things with him.
Half of them are on Quiz Time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, excellent.
Maybe more because they're stick in the muds or the goody two shoes kind of thing. Everyone kind of
yeah.
And boring. I mean, yeah. I won't lie. There are more boring Superman stories than there are Batman stories, but there are boring Batman stories.
But let's face it, Scott Summers is a buzzkill.
He is
a buzzkill.
So it is. I mean, they are boring, but it's super easy to be a villain. It's super hard to be a hero. You know,
yeah.
So it's, you know, props to Cyclops and Superman for fighting the good fight and being our heroes.
Somebody
back
loves
to
you,
us, Scotty. Come back.
Oh. All right.
Don't forget Steve.
Steve
and Steve.
Good boy, Steve.
Good boy, Steve.
Captain America. Okay, let's move on.
Swearing. No, sorry, just Steve.
Oh, in
the movies.
That's right. Yes.
His whole swearing thing.
Oh,
yeah. I was like, what I do? No.
All right. Let's move on. The next subject we're going to be talking about is a subject that is very near and dear to our good friend Cola Hornaday's heart, and it's basically how geeks justify their existence. Now, Cole, you have a bit of a story about this, so why don't you bring this up?
I just had there's been a time. It's been a while since I had this experience, but I recently had an experience with a family member who, you know, stopped me in my tracks and said, "What are you going to do with all those comic books?" I mean, you know, like, and my first thought is,
read them?
Well, what are you going to do with them all? You keep collecting them. What's, you know, what are you going to do with them? Are you going to sell them? Oh, that's
organize
the other part.
Them.
Yeah, that's the other part of the conversation I always find frustrating. It's like, well, when are you going to sell them? And my first thought is, why do you care? Why does it matter? You know, it's, why does it matter if I die alone in a room full of comic books? I mean, Chris is going to come and you know, and poach through them anyway. And,
and dig you out.
Dig, no, he won't dig me out. You'll be digging me out, brother. but I wanted to throw that out to the group of, you know, have you had these kinds of experiences? What type of mental process do you do? Because I found myself withdrawing from the discussion because there was no point. I felt like I had to, you know, defend myself or at least enter into a kind of an imbroglio discussion of what makes me happy and what I take pleasure out of in life. And
it's not, I mean, the thing is, you do not have to defend the things that make you happy.
You shouldn't have to. No.
Well, no. And, you know, so you know, I like, one of the things that I really enjoy doing is something that I did when I was 12 years old, is sit on my bed and organize baseball cards. Mm-hmm. Now, today I can have a glass of scotch with it. Well, I do.
You've made something great better.
Yes.
Exactly.
But heightened the experience.
But yes. I still feel weird mm-hmm. telling people that. Mm-hmm. Telling people like...
Well, there's a stigma around it.
Well, because
it's a stigma that comes from this type of
something
mentality.
That 12-year-olds do. Right. You know, 40-year-olds aren't allowed to do that. And like I was saying before we started taping today, people of my age, they're not, you know, I don't want to say we're not allowed to enjoy opening packs of baseball cards, but I'm supposed to be more in the like serious collector tax bracket of mm-hmm. collectors and like and have like the autographed, you know, whatever card that's worth a lot of money, as opposed to just deriving pleasure from just sitting on my bed and opening up packs of mm-hmm. Tops, mm-hmm. you know, baseball cards, and throwing the gum away because it's bad by now. But
you should fashion
you
it
sure?
into a sword or a shield.
Yeah.
But yeah, but you, I mean, that's the thing. As long as what you're doing is not illegal, you should not feel bad about partaking in an activity that you like, that makes you feel good, that mm-hmm. calms you perhaps mm-hmm. in some way, that gives you your identity.
Because Lord knows I need something to keep me calm.
Which is why I'm trying to convince you to not be bothered by people asking you to defend
actually,
your hobby.
Yeah, I just shut the conversation down as I do anymore because what I hear going on is, well, you don't get me. And I don't have to justify my existence anymore because I'm a grown-up. And however, I did find myself thinking about how, you know, I, like, probably more so than the rest of us at this table, have this unique, I've been uniquely blessed in that I have had the opportunity with Ben Lawrence, with you guys, to spin that love into my creative pursuits. Mm-hmm. We have the Panel Jumper.
Yep.
We have the Perfect
this
Bound
lovely
podcast.
Thing we do every week.
We have, I designed a trilogy of superhero plays. Why? Because I had invested a huge percentage of my life in comic books. And you know, that was an incredibly fulfilling creative experience. Chris took part in that. Nicole saw it. Ben was a part of that process for the team of heroes. You know, not everybody can say that. So.
Mm-hmm. No, we are a very exclusive club, the team of heroes.
We are.
Right.
We are.
Right.
He wears his t-shirt to bed, for pity's sake.
Oh, this is from Wired Magazine. This
no,
is
yeah, but no, but I was just gesturing to you
but,
because you
know.
Were there.
Oh, yeah. I have two t-shirts.
Two or three
I
designed.
And actually, Easter egg, the t-shirt that Manager Mike wears
right.
in the Panel and Jumper episodes
yep.
is a Team of Heroes t-shirt
that's
that
right.
Mr. Cole Hornaday designed. So,
and not every geek who's invested, you know, the majority of his income in comic books can say that, can say they've been blessed with those opportunities. So,
yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to expectation, you know,
uh-huh.
like I've had to constantly defend myself for my own like life choices of not wanting to have kids and the picket fence and mm-hmm. the,
oh,
and the
don't
corporate,
get us started
the,
on
the
that.
Corporate
it
job
is kind of on a par,
the,
though.
You know, but I mean, it's like I'm an alternate person to
yeah.
the standardized thing that, you know, here's what you do with your life, you know?
To the quote, normal, like,
yeah,
American lifestyle.
The normal, like, heteronormative lifestyle.
Yeah.
I don't fit that. So it works really well for me, and mm-hmm. I do have a support system in that of just, like, you do you. You know, my mm-hmm. mom's always, you do you. she supported me when I looked completely ridiculous in like fishnets and like looked like a 3 a.m. drag queen or something like that, you know, but she supported me, so I never really had.
Why 3 a.m.? Baby, you were 24/7.
Because it was busted. That's why. That was high school for me. There's pictures somewhere, but she supported me. So, you know, I.
Right.
Anytime anyone comes in and has an expectation of like, oh, well, we shouldn't because something, you know, yeah. It's just like, are you enjoying yourself? Then good. You know, when people get too crabby and too critical about movies that are there for fun and pleasure, I'm like, well, you should do that less and just enjoy yourself more. you might have a better experience, you know?
It's all part of like trying to fit in. And for people who have such an extensive collection as yourself, so you know, it's not really considered fitting in. It's more so these days, I think. But for like the last generation, maybe not so much. And I remember when I was a kid, I desperately wanted to fit in and be cool in my group of friends, you know, and I pretended to like the things that they liked, and if I liked something and they didn't like something, I convinced myself that I was wrong mm-hmm. in liking mm-hmm. something. And that's just kind of, you know, mm-hmm. just kind of like how kids are sort of conditioned, you know, to succeed you gotta fit in, and when you mm-hmm. don't fit in, people are, I think, maybe are afraid of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not particularly enamored of reliving my teens that way. But I think that what has bothered me with several of these kinds of discussions is it always seems to steer in the direction of the cumulative aspect of collecting, you mm-hmm. know, and that's just a hop, skip, and a jump away from hoarding and mental instability and that sort of thing. And I remember having a conversation with a mutual friend of Ben and I, who used to produce the hoarding TV series, Kim Niehaus, and she used to work for Screaming Flea, is that the name of it? And we had this conversation of the fine line that exists between hoarding and collecting. And then she stopped and she said something like, you know, Cole, we're thinking about producing a show about collectors.
All right. I will tell you, though, there is a mile long, you know, mile wide highway.
The producer of this TV series made that immediate leap, though. So I got a little bit nervous. And I'm like, what are you seeing about me that I'm not seeing in the mirror?
I've seen some of those hoarding TV shows. If you ever want to feel good about the state of your apartment, watch Hoarding.
Well, if there's a mountain in your house, then there's a problem.
Toilet paper.
I guarantee you will not find a dead cat in your pot, your collection of comic books.
World's longest cat is very much
I know
alive.
You have a cat, and he's great.
And he's you know where he is. He's
all
not
the time.
Lost
yes.
somewhere. Yeah.
I have panic attacks when I don't know where he is.
But, I mean, Cole's house is very clean, very organized.
Yeah.
He has displays, all that kind of thing. Same with me. Same with Chris. You know, we all have very nice collections that we've put on display in a certain way to have mm-hmm. a nice aesthetic. So it's different than hoarding. We take pride in what we do.
I've been on Instagram of late, and I love it that I'm connecting with people I don't know who are taking snapshots of their collections, and I do feel a little bit of glee going, oh.
You call that a collection?
No, actually, it's the other way around. It's like, I can't hold a candle to that.
Okay.
Yeah. There are a couple of shots I saw this last week where I thought I was looking at a shop.
Okay.
I thought I was looking at a comic shop, and this was this person's apartment.
Yeah,
you know, because he's got them displayed on the wall. He's got tables set up with his long boxes and mounted on the walls, and it's not a store; it's his home.
So you don't have to divulge anything, but because you run the comic bookstore, I imagine that your house is just a mess because you're like you're done.
His house is incredibly tidy,
but you went through a period
where you started converting everything to
liquidating
and going to bound editions of things,
trade paperbacks and stuff. But you know, I have statues and I have Transformers and you know, there's a lot of space issues with my current place. On a kind of slight backtrack, but not completely. But from time to time, I get customers coming into the store and you know, they've shopped here for a while and they're just kind of like, didn't you go to college? What are you still doing here?
Oh.
And it's just sort of like, first of all, thank you for being rude. second of all, I see you like once every couple, like 6 months or less. Like, why? Who are you to talk about me about that stuff? But it's still just sort of like, Yeah, there's the stigma. Like, yo, you're the comic book guy. Yeah.
Or like an expectation that this is a point to another, right. You know, like, this is just your day job, but you're going to go get that career soon, you know?
Well, right. I could see two people at certain times, like, if I go somewhere and they're just like, what do you do? And I'm just like, I run a comic book store. And there's like kind of an instant, like, you know.
I got nothing.
They immediately know who you are, though. Because they have an idea of what that means. It's not the correct idea, but they have already formed in their head what a comic book store
They have a Big Bang Theory idea of what it is, mm-hmm. or something like that.
I'm thinking more along the lines of The Simpsons.
Yeah, that too.
That's another one.
You know, I've gotten that call a bunch of times. So it's just sort of like, that's great, thank you, nice, whatever. It's retail. It's... gets to be a little bit more obnoxious but consistent for me, so it becomes background chatter and it's just like moving on, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten numb to it, or does it still kind of bug you?
Numb, you know. Yeah. There's actually two interesting divergent directions that could go. I could be introduced at a party as that, and you know, either there's kind of a, you know, or somebody gets like super excited about it, but they don't know to understand that, hey, I'm not at the store right now.
Oh yeah.
So I don't actually really want to know what you think about Stan Lee.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just sort of like, that's great. I'm holding alcohol for a reason. You know, so there's just like, there's no real easy middle line of just being like, oh, cool, you work at a comic book store. You know, let's have actual like random talks like normal people.
Yeah.
You know, it either goes one direction or the other.
I can't talk about politics, you know, even though I run a comic book store.
I rather actually would not. Tell me what you think about Juggernaut. Please go.
All right. Well, anyway, the lesson learned here is regardless, we've been talking about collecting and comic books and baseball cards, regardless of what your weird hobby is, if you enjoy it, have at it. Don't let anybody tell you it's wrong or bad or you're wasting your life, unless it's something illegal.
Well, yeah, just acknowledge that they have a clear expectation of you and it's not accurate. That's all, you know.
Exactly.
And that's where they're coming from. They're coming from a perspective of they're not seeing how your life is, you know.
Alrighty, let's move on to book report, everybody. And Chris, let's start with you. What did you read this week?
Did we want to tag
team?
Yeah,
Chris and I were talking about, we plan to tag team the latest release from...
Thanks for saying it that way, too. I was afraid you were going to say we're going to tag team Neil Adams.
I was trying to think of a descriptive term for Mr. Adams.
Sorry.
Once upon a time, Neil Adams was...
A groundbreaker.
A groundbreaking illustrator.
Fantastic illustrator.
He set a trend for realism in comics in the... Mm-hmm. Would you say it was the early Bronze Age?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. And stuff like the Green Lantern, Green Arrow run, his Dead Man work.
Batman.
Work on Superman. Yeah, Detective Comics with Ra's al Ghul, all that stuff.
Right.
Amazing
Brief run
work.
On X-Men. Yeah.
And then like the 90s rolled around, he did some creator-owned stuff. The Continuity Comics.
Yeah.
They were horrible. And then he kind of just...
Skate Man.
Oh, yeah.
Skate Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of rolled around in the 2000s. I can't remember anything significant.
I think he still had Continuity Comics. He produced cartoons. Remember, what was the rabbit?
Bugs Bunny?
He did a thing.
No, it was a
Who
rabbit.
Who Framed Roger
was,
Rabbit?
No, it was a... Do you remember this?
I don't know.
Oh,
I know he
it.
Did a thing.
A cartoon rabbit.
It was a cartoon rabbit, and there were toys.
You're not talking about the Animaniacs.
You're not talking about Bucky O'Hare.
Kind of
Bucky O'Hare?
Bucky O'Hare, Space Rabbit.
I thought that was somebody else.
No.
I thought that was Michael Golden.
Well, Michael Golden drew it, but it was out of Continuity Comics. Yeah, it was all part of it. Because they were all about trying to do the cross-merchandising with video games and action figures, and they're trying to cash in on that whole trend at the time, and they failed miserably at it. Yeah.
So Neil Adams in the early 2010s or something, mm-hmm. he did Batman Odyssey, which is one of the most atrocious comics you can ever
read. It's just gross.
It's just a train wreck.
Yeah.
So here he's back again. And so it's worth noting that it's actually not as bad.
It's not as bad. But what I also want to point out is that as far as I'm concerned, it's the plot of DK3.
Kinda, yeah.
Only with a gentler Silver Age
And
dent.
There's more Jack Kirby New God stuff in there, you know,
which
makes me nervous because
I thought the storyline was silly and innocuous and actually pleasant, and his I love looking at his artwork.
It's better.
And it's not as obnoxious as it was, you know, because I still look at it and go, this man set design trends in the day. And a lot of illustrators, a lot of young illustrators became popular. You know, you have to remember that this aspect of realism in illustration was not present, was not so prominent back in the Silver Age in the 70s.
I will say, like, his earlier stuff had more of a flow.
Yes.
And he's clunky here for me, especially his paneling. Mm-hmm. There's like a segment in the back here where there's just like a really unnecessary, strange formation of panels. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, he's a little, I don't know if the word jilted is correct, but like his dialogue, it's better here than on Odyssey.
Right.
But it's still like, it's the most forced.
I think he may have had a bit of an editorial assist.
Yeah,
there,
yeah, it's still forced.
He was never meant to be a writer. He was always what I considered a very gifted illustrator, but you should never hand him a word processor.
You know, I don't know if I could tell you what the plot of this was.
It's a mini series. It's running 6 issues.
There's like 3 subplots.
There's a subplot with Darkseid and the Parademons. Well, it's not Darkseid.
Kalibak, it's his son.
Kalibak and the Parademons attacking the Earth. You know, this is an out of continuity story. It's not New 52. It's not post Afterbirth or whatever we're calling this now.
It's Neil Adams verse.
Yeah, it's Neil Adams verse. But what puzzles me is this subplot with the little Arabic boy.
Yeah, he goes to the Middle East and he starts kind of saving people, but then he's like, well, I can't help too much, you know.
But I will rescue this little Arabic orphan from terrorists and bring him back to the States with me.
I'm going to take this puppy with me too.
Right, and the puppy. And there's that aspect of rescuing the little brown brother that's kind of disconcerting to me.
Yeah, that's a thing that they used to do back in the 70s quite a bit.
But speaking of Neil Adams, this is a little sidebar I realized I shared with Chris off mic. It kind of speaks to Mr. Adams' lack of originality in his creative process is there's this alien he's a djinn, right? He's supposed to be a djinn. Yeah. Because we've got this Middle East stuff happening here that hasn't really gelled yet. But while Mr. Adams was not working in comic books, he was also doing a lot of storyboarding and a lot of film design, conceptual design. And there was an underproduced film adaptation of Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End. And if you've not read the book, you really should read the book. Don't watch the sci-fi series. You don't want to do that. Read a book. But the djinn here is the exact same design he did for the Overlords in his conceptual designs from the film that was not adapted in the 70s. Go look it up online. The illustrations are really fascinating and really beautiful, but they look exactly like this, but with red skin.
Right, so he kind of recycled a bit, which, you know, people do that. It bugs me, but they do that.
Not in my world, Chris.
So what's our world. Do we have a consensus on whether or not we want to throw the comic across the room?
Oh, no. I don't
want to
throw it across the room.
I want to.
You do you?
Well, it's boring. And to me, boring is almost a worse sin than bad.
Okay.
You know, you have a very unique medium here to be dynamic, and you are one of the most dynamic creators in the history of comic, and you were boring. Mm-hmm. So that's almost like more being disappointed is worse than just being confronted by something that's bad in some cases. And it's just sort of like, okay.
Super valid point. I was not bored. I just was kind of intrigued because I was actually caught up in the saccharine charm of the book. And I think I'm going to keep reading it.
Alrighty. Cool. What about you, Nicole?
I read something completely different. I read Welcome to Sideshow, created by Ian McGinty, but drawn and written by... Oh, no, created, written, and drawn by Ian McGinty, except that then we had all these other artists and letterers and backup people. So not really sure what the background is on that. But it's a very cute all-age tale in this strange world called Sideshow. It starts off with very interesting artwork telling a story of two people in love from warring places, and they can never be together. And then it goes into the super cutesy version art style of these people who are inside Showside, being like, oh, that's a great story. Wish that was true. And then they just move on with their life. So there's actually like 3 stories in here. And they're just friends hanging out. oh, hey, look, we found this pixel portal. This pixel cat came out. Oh, no, this pixel cat wants to kill us. Is something like a Neonomicon, but they call it a Teenonomicon. And it's this book that this one girl who's kind of sorceress-like has. And at one point, it runs away saying, my 90s-era comic collection isn't going to burn itself. I'm out of here, because the kitty cat turns into this big pixel monster. And he goes, hi, I'm Joshua. I'm here to crush your town. And they're all like, what? So it's just silly stuff like that. And they fight the baddie, and they defeat him. And, you know, everything's like, oh, that's great. And then there's some other stuff to, you know, keep you reading and pull you back in. Like, you need to. It's just cute and silly. There's my favorite, though, is there's another side story in the back with the same characters, and it's called The Best Hoodie in the Universe, and it's written by Ian McGinty, and the art is by Carrie Peach, who did my favorite Adventure Time comic, the Marceline Gone Adrift. And it's the main guy and this other person, they're fighting over this hoodie. They get the Teenonomicon shoots them into some other portal, but I just love the whole aspect of the hoodie, because the two people, they end up wearing the hoodie together. And the guy says, the girl with the Teenonomicon says, you two are ridiculous. You know that, right? And then there's like, hey, say what you want to say, Moon, but I'm finally living the life I've always wanted inside this hoodie. It's just, it's cute, silly things like that. So it's really fun. I'll keep reading it. And I like all the different art styles in there too. So I'd highly recommend it. All age fun comic.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show, and quiz time is coming up. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. You can see everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. It's also brought to you by Comic Stungeon at 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford. Or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any RSS reader of your choice at perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now get your quiz hats on, everybody. It's quiz time.
I
want to
watch Nicole anthropomorphose over here. She
was
went
trying to Pac-Man, but I
thought you were being a grouper or a gecko.
Today, the quiz time questions come to us from Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
This is all Cyclops related. Surprise,
yay!
Surprise.
There you go.
Okay, so after years of Marvel teasing the existence of a third Summers brother, the first being Havoc, leader of X-Factor sometimes, Ed Brubaker finally introduced the character in 2006. He quickly became a central villain and the emperor of the Shi'ar Empire. What was his name? Villain name or real name?
You got me.
See, I remember it being a biblical name. I wanted to say Exodus, but that was taken by a different guy.
Gabriel Summers, a.k.a. Vulcan.
I wasn't even close.
Okay. Next question. Cyclops has a son who is older than him, a daughter who's not really his daughter because she's from an alternate future, another son who's not really his son because he's from an alternate reality, and another son who's not really his son because he's a clone of his son. I hate the X-Men. Name two of any of these characters I just mentioned.
Well, one of them was X-Man.
You went for the vaguest one, yeah. Or like the weirdest one. Good job.
Yeah, because that guy just doesn't exist in continuity anymore.
Kind of sort of does.
Well, the other one is Nate Summers, who is Cable.
Yes. Yep. So, yeah.
And then
Cable,
we're daughters.
And Nate Gray is X-Man. Rachel,
Nate Gray, thank you.
Rachel's,
they're all Nates, right?
Yeah, they're all Nates.
And the girls are all
Rachel Summers, who's from an alternate timeline. Yeah. And Strife is the clone of Cable.
Oh, I totally forgot about
who
that.
Who was raised by his foster father, Apocalypse, in an alternate future. Okay.
That was a Liefeld character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True or false? Cyclops' eyes contain interdimensional apertures, releasing powerful energies from another dimension into his own via the beams. This account states that his body naturally metabolizes ambient energy that is used to open and focus the apertures in his eyes. The energy of the beam itself originates from another dimension.
Did George Lucas write that?
True or false?
Wow. That was so elaborate, I'm going to have to say it was true.
At one point it was, but now it's
not anymore.
It was later changed in the 1986 official handbook of the Marvel Universe. So in one of those official handbooks, some guy was like, burp a derp, alternate energy, and then somebody else was like, terp a derp, no.
So it's both. It's both true and false.
Yes. It's burp for derp.
Derp for derp.
Of course, of course.
There's a lot of derp. This is the X-Men. Okay, here's a big derp. During the event called The 12, Cyclops was merged with what major X-Men villain? Like, unified, body and soul merge. Mowage.
Mowage.
I actually did just mention the villain a little while ago.
I don't know.
Vulcan?
Apocalypse.
Apocalypse, I don't know.
And I always used to call him Apocalypse. So, final question. What villain has been obsessed with Scott Summers' bloodline ever since, even before his powers manifested, and even spied on him when he was in an orphanage?
Mr. Sinister.
Yes.
All right. Oh,
thank
well,
goodness I got one.
That's quiz time. Thank you, Chris. And that's our show. Please tune in next week. We will see you then.
Cyclops.